two personalities debating today's biggest geek topics. This is Project Nerds Versus.
Welcome, Pro Nerds, back to another episode of Versus, only on Project Nerd. And we're back. Your original hosts, Tyler and Iggy, are here. How's it going, Tyler?
Not too bad. When's the last time it was just the two of us? Been like 6 weeks now?
It has been. All June, we had coverage. It's like we're out adults doing things. It's weird to get back out in this world.
But that's went on vacation, left town, did things.
Yeah.
Sunburn, it was fantastic.
Went to a baseball game, was pretty nice. Pretty nice. That's why I missed. But yeah, Q filled in, did pretty good. But we're going back to our roots in this one. All right. We're going back to our roots in this one. Two of us getting it going. We've got some big things to talk about this week. Not only has it been a busy June, but just ahead of the 4th of July holiday, it seems to be crazy with things happening. So should we just dive right in?
Let's do it. Give it to me. What's up first?
Well, something that I know we both love was Good Omens. And Good Omens Season 1 was fantastic, actually. But it was Neil Gaiman himself who dropped the news this week that Good Omens 2 is coming to Amazon Prime in the future. Interesting, but possibly troublesome. And you know why, because Pratchett and Gaiman's book, obviously, as fantastic as it was, and the first season was, that first season encompassed the whole book. So we're out of source material. And I know there's some things that Gaiman's mentioned and stuff too, but are you worried about us diving into new territory? Or do you think with Gaiman being a part of it, things will be okay and we'll get a good second season?
I'm 100% okay with them giving it a shot, but I'm going to keep my expectations low. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Like, there's definitely a lot more. I'm curious if they're going to stick with the like end of the world tropes. Like, are they going to stick with that kind of like message? Like, it's, you know, end of the world take two kind of thing, or are they going to go off in different directions and explore different themes? Because there's obviously plenty of end of the world tropes they can play with on it, but I don't know. Doing things without Terry is tricky for me. Like, I still haven't gotten over the fact that he's not here anymore and I will never get another Discworld book, but I'm willing to give it a shot. I mean, the question was, is there a reason to worry? It won't be anywhere near as good as the first. I don't think there's any way it can be as good as the first. And the first still had its issues. There's still things about the first that there's bits that drag a bit. There's some characters that don't really work well, but for all intents and purposes, that is a tough story to translate to a visual medium. They did about as good a job as you could, mainly just because you can't really do much better than Michael Sheen and David Tennant as your leads, and just their chemistry alone carries it everywhere it needs to go. So,
well, you disappeared for a second. Well, while you've disappeared, I'm gonna jump in here and say I agree that it could be good, but we also have some could be bad, I guess would be the way. Gaiman is involved. He did mention that Pratchett and him threw around some ideas for the second one. Unfortunately, I like you said, it's not going to be as written as well as the book was. So, but I'm worried because as much as Gaiman is involved in this, he's also involved in the American Gods show. And I'm going to be honest, I don't like that show at all. As we get a tour of your house here. I didn't like the American Gods show at all. I don't think it was a good adaptation, and Gaiman is involved in that. So I'm hopeful, but at the same time, I think you said it best. Expectations will remain low. And unfortunately, I'm stalling for time now. So it's, you're on mute there still.
Here's the thing. I'm 100% here. I just knocked my webcam behind my desk and I don't have time to thread it back all the way through. So I'm doing my best just to get us something that's workable here for a minute. There you go.
Oh, it looks good. Perfect.
Well, there's a cord running right here that I can't touch. So.
Don't touch it. Anyways, I think we're on the same page as this one. A little bit, I don't know. What did you feel about the American Gods show?
I think American Gods had some really amazing moments mixed in with some not so great moments. That's an even harder thing to translate because like a huge chunks of that book are just, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's a travelogue. It's like a road trip book. Stretching it out into multiple seasons makes it tricky. Then there's the whole, like, how do you tell this entire sequence that takes place in like one little town? And then there's some great things about it. There's some not so great things about it. I think there's a lot of showrunners who have come in and out who have done better or worse than others, but there were some things about it I really liked, but there was a lot of things that from the get-go I was kind of like, eh, not sold on. Part of it is, and this is true of a lot of things when you try to move, we've had this conversation before, but a lot of, there's so many stories that when you try to change mediums, one of the reasons they don't work is in a novel, you can have a boring, blank slate, identifiable protagonist who's getting carried through the story. And in a book, when you're sitting there reading it, it works. On the screen, you have to have something more engaging for that character. Like they still need to be, you still need to be able to relate them. Here's the thing. Shadow works as a book protagonist when you're reading the story. Shadow on the screen is completely and utterly uninteresting, and it's hard to like root for him. It's hard to get on his side. It's hard to relate to him. Whereas on the page, where he's more nebulous, it's easier to like go along on the ride with him. Where on screen, it's harder, I would say. Like, I think that's one of the biggest, I think that's one of the biggest gaps. It's almost impossible to get to bridge when you're switching certain books into a different medium.
I think you led me where I was hoping you would, and that makes me feel better about Good Omens Season 2, because these characters, as you mentioned, and especially who they cast for them, are characters that I think did well on the screen. So maybe something to look forward there too. But anyways, we can move along now. Now that we're all fixed and ready to go.
Yeah, as fixed as we're going to be for the rest of the night. So Patty Jenkins has said her new Star Wars film, Rogue Squadron, will take the Star Wars mythos into, quote unquote, a new era. And, quote, embrace unexplored elements of the franchise. Jenkins made it clear how much she wanted to make the best fighter pilot movie of all time. I don't know that anyone's unseating Top Gun, but we'll see. But how far can she carry this on her own? Rogue Squadron was lightly touched on in the original trilogy. There's little bits and pieces that got expanded out into other things. And it has an entire series of books that have obviously been pushed into the Legends line, and a number of video games. I think for a lot of people, they know Rogue Squadron from the video games. Like they played all, I mean, I played all the Rogue Squadron games. I don't know. What do you think new era means?
That's what got to me, is like, what does new era mean? So her making it her own, she did a great job with Wonder Woman, obviously. And then we've seen with where you can go. Oh, sorry. Wonder Woman 1. Very good point. And so you can see Star Wars having that ability to go places. I think Rogue One is a totally underrated movie, you know, that tells the story away from the, even though it's intertwined with it, it's away from the Skywalker saga. And then obviously what we're seeing with The Mandalorian is fantastic storytelling. So I think she can go new era and make it her own. But new era is a big term here, you know, like, what are you going to do so different? And it kind of excites me, but it kind of worries me, because it excites me in the fact that Star Wars itself brought in a new era of sci-fi, brought in a new era of storytelling. So I don't know what she means here by it, but I'm assuming she means she's going to make it her own and make it wildly different. I don't know.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, new era could just mean a new cast of characters, and we're going to go to new planets. We're going to meet new people that have never, because for better or for worse, every movie that we've made, all nine of them have been the story of this one family and a lot of characters. I mean, there are literally characters who are in all nine movies for all intents and purposes. Like, I mean, I would be shocked. That's the biggest thing, is I feel like for better or for worse, Star Wars is like the mythos, the legends, the continuity, the characters that we all have grown to love for 30, 40 years are one of the things that makes it amazing, but it's also one of the things that holds it back. And I think a lot of the problems that LucasArts had, Kathleen Kennedy, all those, is like an unwillingness, J.J. Abrams, an unwillingness to be like, you know, you don't have to have, they don't have, like, those characters don't have to be the heroes of it. Like Han Solo and Chewie and Luke and Leia and C-3PO don't have to be in everyone for it to be good. You just go watch Rogue One and you'd be like, yeah, like you can, you look at the watch of The Mandalorian, and even The Mandalorian has those people in and out. And at the end, they finally, like, as much, they went two full seasons without any too much. And then Luke Skywalker has to come in and save the day at the end. So it's like one of those things where it's tricky. Like you have to find that weird kind of balancing act. And there's a lot of people, you look at The Last Jedi, who, if you mess with that at all, are going to pillory you. But at the same time, like, you, if you ever want, if they want this to continue to like move and go forward and breathe, and like they're gonna have to do different directions. And here's the thing, they've done a really good job of picking and choosing, like Dave Filoni, John Favreau, all those people have done a really good job of picking and choosing the bits of the EU or the Legends books, if you will, and picking out the good bits and like sinking them in, like picking out Thrawn and throwing him into Rebels and throwing him into Mandalorian, picking out, you know, Death Troopers or taking out like some Clone Wars, like all these little bits and pieces. So like if they can go get all the good stuff out of like Rogue Squadron books and like mesh it into the world and move forward with the stories, like I'm all for it. So I don't know, are they still gonna let Rian Johnson just go make some more movies, because they were gonna do that for a minute and then they weren't, and everyone hated Left Jedi except for the people who loved it, and then Netflix said here's $1 billion, go make whatever. So
that's more Knives Out, right?
That's the trilogy I want. Where's Rian Johnson's his trilogy for Star Wars?
I think so. He's a great storyteller. Be interesting. I think you have so much untapped stuff here to take it into, well, quote unquote, a new era. But speaking of new era, let's talk a little bit new era on what's going on in the gaming world. So I think anybody who is aware with these next gen systems, and we've seen it for a couple systems as well as in movies and stuff, everything's kind of pushing digital. Xbox has done a fantastic job with their new experience with their gaming thing. Obviously, PlayStation Plus, as far back as the PlayStation 4, phenomenal games every month for those that pay for it. The digital push makes sense, obviously, because they save money on making physical discs. However, there seems to be more reason to it now, a reason that we were probably worried about. An advertising platform known as PlayerOne, WON, will launch this week with the intent to bring ads to run TV, or to bring TV-style ads inside of console games. Seriously. So we're dropping $70 a game, and now there's the possibility of ads being in the middle of it. And we're talking traditional style ads, so not downloadable content or buying other accessories. What do you feel about this possibility? Obviously, it's still fresh. It's still possible. It's not happening yet. But what does this make you think? What kind of angry feelings are you feeling right now?
I mean, yeah, I feel like this is just a, what's the word I'm looking for? This is a evolution that we should have seen coming with the free-to-play gaming model. Like there's so many of the most popular games are free-to-play games. That money has to be made somewhere. Typically, historically, it's been made with skins and loot boxes and cosmetics, and in some games just straight up like pay-to-win kind of stuff, like get better this, get better that. And a lot of mobile games, it's always like it's to remove time gating. Like you only have so many lives, but if you give us this much money, you get this many more and you can play all day. And it, you know, feeds into the whole gambling mentality of gaming and stuff like that. I'm assuming, I don't think that there's any way, I mean, ads in games that I bought has always been a thing. Like the number of billboards or splash ads or just even like the music playing in a Madden game, like ads in games have always been a thing. They'll always continue to be a thing. I don't know that they can get away with a straight up commercial playing in a AAA title that I paid $60-$70 for. What I could see is ads start being in the loading screens of, you know, Call of Duty Warzone, which you don't have to pay anything to play, or Fortnite. What's the other big battle royale that people are playing these days? Apex Legends, like that kind of game, or Knockout City, those kinds of games. And I don't know that you can make a, I mean, it'll make people angry, but I don't know that there's any way that you could, you're not paying for the game. Like that's the problem, is every time people get mad about these things, they're like, well, you don't have to give them any money, but I feel like this is the way to get money from the people from whom they're not getting any money from. So, I mean, if you download any crappy free game on a mobile device, you've already played this game. After so many turns, you're going to have to watch a video or click on a thing, or it's going to play an ad in the bottom or something. Like, I don't know that this should surprise anyone that's coming. It's just the question is how deep is it going to go? Am I going to see this on things I paid money for, or am I going to see this specifically on my free battle royale style games? And will I have an option to, or are they going to do like go the Kindle route with it? Be like, hey, you can pay this much for the game, it's going to have ads. If you you throw us an extra $20, though, we get you that special deluxe version with no ads. So,
right. No, I think in the industry I work in, and I mean, actually similar to you, you know, we work in consumer electronics, and we see this, that the direction of ads paying for things as we get more and more options again, is becoming a norm again. We're becoming more customs commercial. HBO even this summer is dropping their, you know, AVOD driven version to where a little bit cheaper, but you're going to have some ads in there. And obviously Hulu's done that model for some time. I look at some of the TVs we have. We talk about having hundreds of apps on them, on those name brand TVs. Almost all of them are ad driven. So I think you're right in the sense that we saw this coming. We've started to get accustomed to ads. We've started to see the companies, even outside of TV streaming and movie streaming, have seen that it's working for that industry again to go back to the ad model, even if it's not on traditional TV. I agree with you. I think where we're going to see this first makes total sense. As I'm sitting there waiting for Fortnite to load the map, throw in an ad, it's not taking me any more time. It's not anything different. Now I'm just seeing an advertisement. What I am concerned about is because money drives everything. And this is such a marginal, I mean, there's such marginal lines of profit in this industry already that those games we do pay 60 to 70 bucks for are going to possibly be ones that eventually see more ads as well. I think obviously if we're paying that money, they're going to have to be very careful about how they do it or people are going to lose it. But I still think that they're going to eventually make their way in there just because of how little profit it is. And as we keep going further, I mean, we're going to get to a point in the next couple of years where our game's going to cost $100, or are they going to find other ways to make money? So it's concerning. I think it's, even though I posed this question, I think it's too early to give a good answer on, you know, being angry or anything, but I'm definitely a little worried of where this could go.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, nothing we're going to say is going to make it not happen. Like, this is one of those things that this is the realities of the world now. So it's just how much backlash are they going to get and how brazen are they going to get with it? I think are the only real two questions. So,
right.
All right. Let's talk one of our favorite topics. Let's do some MCU stuff. All right. Loki is here. We are, as of this recording, 4 episodes deep, but you and I have only each watched 3 at this point. And it might be the best show yet. I don't know. WandaVision still holding number 1, but like, really? Loki's, I mean, the aesthetic of the TVA, like Tom, I mean, there are worse ideas than hanging an entire show on the charisma of Tom Hiddleston. Like there are worse things you could try to do, but it is shaping up to be probably their best show. I have a feeling it could do it. Although we haven't watched this yet. The first 3 have been amazing. I was a little bit like, I love Loki a lot, don't get me wrong, but we had kind of his arc is had come and gone and been played out. Like, I was kind of over him in the MCU, or I thought I was, and then they brought him back and they pulled me back in again, not unlike the Godfather. So how do you feel about it? Is the MCU Disney Plus got you back? Are you back on board with the MCU? Are you ready for, like, do you need 3 movies to come out in the next 3 months, which is almost what's going to happen, but are you back on the MCU train? I think a lot of us fell off the MCU train during quarantine. Has this one lit the fire again?
Honestly, a combination of things have, but yeah, we do have 3 movies in the next 6 months again. We are back to craziness, and the next topic is going to be MCU. I think the shows have energized me a little bit. I think also to introducing my fiance to the world. So we did spend most of 2020 revisiting everything and kind of going through it again, felt a little bit, you know, especially in last year when we needed those nostalgic moments, we needed those familiar viewing experiences. I'm with you 100%. And in fact, I was even writing that Loki, I was done. Like, I love Tom Hiddleston and him as Loki has been fantastic, but we almost lose sight of Thor in certain Thor things because it's so much Loki, and I was ready to move on, but you're right. This show is fantastic. This is my favorite show. I'm already going to say I like it. Obviously we already aren't eye to eye on WandaVision anyways. I think this is the best of the 3 series and we're only halfway through. Obviously they could dive off a cliff and I could change my mind. And apparently episode 4 does go nuts, but the first 3 episodes, the first one moved a little slow, but you know, we saw that with Captain, you know, with the Winter Soldier or Falcon and Winter Soldier as well. But then it just picks up. And I think that 3rd episode was fantastic. And the long, obviously it was faked single shot, but there's that long shot sequence that they do towards the end of that 3rd episode. There's just great filmmaking being done in these. And that, I think, is what's also helping me get ready for these movies, because it's reminding me of the production and the efforts that go into these. So it's not just that it's a show with these characters. It's the reminder that we saw the action in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. We saw the super creative, you know, twists and turns in WandaVision. And now we're just seeing great creative sequences again in this, that I think I'm ready to see what Eternals has to offer.
Yeah. I mean, I've loved everything about it. I'm excited to see it. Like you said, the filmmaking has been great. That's if nothing else about Loki, like the aesthetics of it, of the TVA, of the different worlds they've gone to, has been beautiful. I love everything about it. As far as being back on board, I was back on board when I saw the first Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings trailer, and then the new one just came out, and I'm on board for that 100%. Like if anything else, that had me back on board. So, but we've got Black Widow in almost exactly a week from this weekend. So yeah, we get that, and then we get, is it Eternals then Shang-Chi, or is it Shang-Chi and then it's Shang-Chi then Eternals, isn't it? I feel like it has to be, because I've seen two Shang-Chi Eternal trailers and I've seen like a teaser for Eternals.
Well, we're not getting another Eternals trailer is what Kevin Feige has said, and he also said that's it for Shang-Chi, but I think you're right. I think Shang-Chi's gotta September be, right? and then it's November for Eternals, then we get Spider-Man in December, and then I think in March we get because they reordered all next year, so I don't even remember what comes in March. So is it Doctor Strange?
I'm going to look right now. So we get Black Widow on July 9th, Shang-Chi on September 3rd, Eternals on November 5th, Spider-Man on December 17th, then Doctor Strange, Thor, Black Panther, Marvels will be next year.
Damn, dude. So we better get excited because it's coming. This is as inevitable as the gaming ads that we were just talking about. It's coming and we're going to see them. I mean, they're going to be good. As we've talked about, we've talked about it multiple times in the Nerdcast, and even right here, they've had a couple misses with some MCU movies, but the overall arc and tying everything together has been fantastic. The universe itself the picture they have painted for that wide universe has been really good and really impressive. So
yeah, I'm excited.
But should we continue to talk MCU? Because actually, you brought up Black Panther 2. And I know we're talking a lot of MCU right here at the end, but I think it's really important as Black Panther, you know, Wakanda Forever gets started, the filming started, production's moving. Kevin Feige had came out and said, we're going to make a movie that's going to make Chad proud. And, Chadwick Boseman obviously gone too early. And I think we both think they've made the right decision in not replacing him, but it does bring up a few questions. One, what are they going to do here? They've got a lot of choices. We've kind of talked about it a little bit, but now that it's actually moving, let's really predict what we think they're going to follow. And then obviously there's got to be some moment in this where they pay the respect to him. Is there anything in your mind where you see that big, like where we're going to have to hide those tears at the theater moments?
I mean, I feel like they're going to have to. Like, I feel like that'll be the meat of probably the first half of the movie would be just that piece of it and then moving on. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I trust Ryan Coogler. I trust Kevin Feige. I'm excited to see what they do with it. I don't even want to like speculate that much just because I want to be surprised by this one. Like, I want to see what they have planned, but I trust Ryan Coogler, and I feel like he cares enough about this story that we're going to get something good. So, but right. I don't know. Every idea that I have feels not good enough. So I don't know. We'll see.
It's going to be hard. Boseman, you know, stormed on the scene playing iconic, you know, is super important Black characters, both non-fictional and fictional, so incredibly well. You know, 42 with Jackie Robinson, and then obviously the king here in Black Panther. And it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. I think you're right. I think the opening somehow has to have to be the emotional one. I don't think you hold it for the end. I think you just get it done right out of the way. I know in the comics, and I know people are going to be like, oh, actually it's not Shuri. But, you know, obviously we've moved on from Iron Man also. And we did have a young woman who took on the role of Ironheart in the comics. I think we could kind of combine that, and Shuri could really take that mantle, and it could be built here in Wakanda Forever. Obviously you have some other amazing characters that were in the first movie that have also been in other MCU pieces that could really take a equally center stage in this film. But I think focusing on Shuri, and I would love to see it go that Ironheart direction or at least something similar. That would be interesting in my mind.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to say. There's at least four people who were in the first movie that I could see being Black Panther. The question is will all of them, will some of them, will be none of them? I don't know, but I guess we just have to wait and see. We got to wait till next year.
And first of all, I've always loved M'Baku, and they did a great job with him. And not only that, even in his small role, obviously there in Infinity War, but you can give us more of him and his tribe too, would be interesting. I don't know. I'm up for it. Awesome. All right. Well, that's it for our big topics today. As always, we'd love to hear your feedback too. So wherever you're getting your Project Nerd podcast, you know, we have five opinions here. We'd love to know yours on those. And of course, let us know what you want to hear from us in the future. Questions, topics that are happening right now, because obviously there's so many things that happen in pop culture and geek culture, and we can only cover so much. So, but we're not done completely. We're just done with the big one. So I was talking with Q on this too, and you've been talking. We need to figure out this air horn thing because it's quick hits. So quick hits, obviously, because there are so many more topics to cover. We got to run down some quick hits, talk some quick things. Really want to go over a few. One of them in particular, EA posting on social media that, quote, now is a great time to get back to Jedi Fallen Order. We've talked about the new Star Wars video games that are supposed to be happening. Are we getting a hint here about a possible sequel?
I mean, I would assume, like, I would be surprised if they weren't making a sequel of this game. It was incredibly good, and people loved it, and it was a fun story. It was fun gameplay. It was one of the few times outside of Rogue One where they really nailed how fucking terrifying Darth Vader probably really was to people during the during the time between Episode 3 and Episode 4. So I'm on board. If that's what it is, I hope that's what it is, because I would like to play another one of those.
Me too. I simply say me too. And let's move along.
Amazon has revealed the logo and premiere for its Wheel of Time series. It will be coming out this year. Also, Apple just finally released a real trailer for Foundation based on Isaac Asimov's book that will also be coming out later this year in September. Are we excited for either of these, both of these, neither of these?
I'm trying to see how big that smile is going to get on your face. Obviously, we're excited for both of these, Wheel of Time, but I feel like you're even more excited.
Here's the thing. I am cautiously optimistic. I have read all 14 of these books, and the time between me reading the first one and this me reading the second one is almost, God, how long was it? 10, 15 years? Like, I mean, there was a 15 to 16, 17 year gap between me reading the first book and finally reading the last book. Obviously, Robert Jordan died. There was a lot going on there. They're literally long ass books. I had to start over again, but there's a lot there that could get cut, and it sounds like a lot of it's going to get cut, condensed, reordered, moved around, but I'm excited to see what they do with it, because it is a classic. For better or for worse, I mean, there's plenty of legitimate and illegitimate gripes that have been aimed at this series and at Robert Jordan, but when it's all said and done, like, these are one of the formative, like, epic fantasy novel series of, you know, the last 100 years, so, like, I'm excited to see what they do. I love Rosamund Pike. I'm excited to see what they do with it. Foundation is another one of those ones. They're obviously taking major liberties with it, but I think in the last year or so, if you haven't watched anything on Apple TV Plus, you've been missing out. They're making some really crazy good entertainment, and they obviously backed a dump truck up of money up for this one, because it looks, you got Jared Harris and Lee Pace, and that's just the first two people on the call sheet, like two Emmy winners out the gate and then going from there. So, I mean, I'm excited for both these shows, and we're getting them both this year, which is super exciting.
There you go. Well, never quick hits with books on with Tyler, but Wes Anderson's new film, which is going to star Tilda Swinton, starts filming soon in Spain. But that got me thinking, where the hell's The French Dispatch? I want this movie. Do we know anything about this? Are you still looking forward to it?
I mean, it's a Wes Anderson movie. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. It looks good. I don't remember the last time I heard anything about it. Dude, who ended up getting the rights to distribute it? Do we even know?
I mean, I think I don't know. I thought
It was Fox Searchlight. So Fox Searchlight bought it, then was bought by Walt Disney. So who knows? I mean, it's done. It's on a shelf somewhere. I think they're probably just got to find a weekend where they think it can actually make some money. Because Wes Anderson's definitely one of those films where I feel like it almost needs to be in a theater, to make the money it's going to make. It's not, I mean, we've talked about this ad nauseum, but I mean, this isn't like a Nolan blockbuster, but like Wes Anderson is a very niche, for as much as we love him in our circles, like he is still a fairly niche director for a lot of things. Like these need to be released correctly or it would be unsurprising if it doesn't get released. Well, it would make no money. So,
right. Oh, for sure.
One more Marvel hit. Promise it's the last one. The new Phoenix, God, the Phoenix, is getting her own comic series, which according to Marvel is, quote, ahead of her MCU debut. Will any of the movies already filmed have X-Men cameos, or are we waiting longer?
I don't know. I feel like Phoenix could fit in somewhere, would be one of the characters. There's been other just very loose rumors, right? They're very loose rumors, nothing from Feige himself or anything, that there's a possibility. I would assume maybe by Doctor Strange. So not quite filmed yet, but in production, I guess would be a way to put it.
Yeah, Doctor Strange would be a weird one, I feel like, to slide them into. And you can't really do it with Eternals because that gets too a little bit muddled. Those are too similar of like ideas. I could also just see, and I think it would probably upset people, I could still at this point see them doing X-Men characters, but not as their own. That's one thing is you read Marvel Comics, X-Men books are these books, the Avengers and main hero books are these books, the Cosmics are these books. Sometimes they cross over, but you can read only X-Men books and not know anything else going on in the world. I would not be surprised if at this point, you know what, the world's gotten big enough in the MCU, just introduce individual X-Men characters as people who have these, they're mutants and they got powers. You don't need they don't have to put all of them in the same box. Like, you can put Wolverine can show up in a movie, or Cyclops, or Jean Grey, or you know, whoever can show up in a movie, and it not have to be, you don't have to have put all of them in it.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like,
no, totally. It doesn't. And that's where
we don't have to do a whole storyline of just about mutants. We can just be like, oh, here's a guy who can shoot laser beams from his eyes. His name's Scott.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, don't choose Cyclops as the one guy you put in a movie, but as an example.
All right. Lastly, super exciting. Quentin, obviously nothing's coming of it, but Quentin Tarantino recently did an interview where he hinted that he wanted to turn all his films into stage plays. How quickly are you heading to live theater? And what's the first one you're seeing? I mean, I know you're going, but what's the first one you're seeing as a stage play?
God, I don't know. Probably Reservoir Dogs.
I was going to say Reservoir Dogs.
Reservoir Dogs or Pulp Fiction are really the only two that I think, and possibly Hateful Eight. Those are the only three that I think make an easy transition to the stage because they're dialogue based. They're two people talking to each other based. Kill Bill's not going to work as a stage play, nor is Inglourious Once Upon a Bastard. Time in Hollywood or Inglourious Basterds. So it's got to be one of those three. But also, Quentin Tarantino says lots of things, and none of them ever. He's retired 17 times at this point. He just reiterated another interview a couple weeks ago that he's really, really done this time with the movie business. So whatever. I don't know.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Awesome. All right. Well, that was a quick episode of Versus. As always, you can catch us every other Thursday on Project Nerd. And of course, Project Nerd Podcast is what you need to search to find us on Google, Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. We're on a lot of feeds there too. And of course, not just Versus, but The Last Word is what we alternate with, and many other series on that Project Nerd feed, as well as multiple other Project Nerd feed. You know what? There's just so much Project Nerd content. Just go to projectnerd.com. That's project-nerd.com to check out all of our podcasts, all of our video series, and even our fun blog that's been around for quite a while now. We're going on a decade, so much more to come in the fall as well. Yeah, got a lot happening, a lot of cooking, so enjoy Versus, enjoy the rest of it. All right, Tyler, I felt like we were in mid-season form.
Knocked it off, just killed it.
I mean, literally knocked it off with the camera. But other than that...
Listen, there were some technical difficulties, but we got through them.
We recovered. We recovered well. We did a good job.
We're just doing it live. That's what happens when you do it live.
Right? There you go. Well, that's it for this episode of Versus. Until next time, nerd.